Modern smartphones are sleek and thin, but they're also fragile and expensive. If you're really careful, you may use it until you're ready to upgrade without shattering the glass. But if you look around, you'll see most phones wrapped in a case for protection. Our personal data is even more valuable than the device it's stored on, and it deserves just as much protection. The work that I do requires me to travel a lot, which means I'm frequently connected to unfamiliar networks. Nefarious hackers can make up to $1,000 selling the data of each of their victims on the dark web, and there are cheap hardware and software tools readily available that let even a smart middle schooler snatch your data without you even noticing. A virtual private network, or VPN, like ExpressVPN, creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your devices and the servers that you're transmitting data to and from. When you're sitting at the airport gate area, or airline lounge, or even your hotel room, those Wi-Fi networks aren't secure. Your bits are flying through the air, and whether you're checking your bank account balance, sending data to a client, or just checking your email, bad actors can snatch up your usernames, passwords, and everything else you send and receive if it's not encrypted. The layers of security used by ExpressVPN would take over a billion years to expose by bad guys with some of the most powerful supercomputers. ExpressVPN trusted server technology also runs each session in memory in a unique virtual space that is wiped clean as you end your session, with none of your data ever written to a hard drive, so there's no residue for anyone to recover about what you were doing after the fact. ExpressVPN runs on almost all devices, including Windows, Mac, iOS, Linux, Android, streaming devices like Chromecast, Roku, Fire Stick, and Apple TV, and there's also a Chrome browser extension. It's super simple to use. Once you install ExpressVPN, it's one click to establish a secure encrypted tunnel with servers in 105 countries around the world. I've personally been paying for and using ExpressVPN for years on all of my personal devices. When I first started using VPNs for work more than 20 years ago, they were often slow and unstable and had to be restarted frequently. But with ExpressVPN, data speeds are virtually unchanged from running fully exposed, so you can just turn the VPN on and leave it on. I often get materials from clients and companies that are under embargo or NDA, and if it leaks out, I can get into some trouble. But even if I just wanted to reach back to my personal server to grab some files, check my email, or watch something that's only available on one of my streaming services at home while I'm out of the country, ExpressVPN lets me do it all securely. Your data is valuable. Don't let bad actors steal it and potentially misuse it. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And you can get an extra 3 months free when you sign up. Expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting Wheelbearings.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Coming up on episode 266 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the BMW i4 eDrive 40 and the M50, as well as the Genesis GV60, the Subaru BRZ, the new Ford Super Duty, Honda's Prologue is shown off, the Hummer EV fails for a friend, and Volvo EX90. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 266 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abu-Al-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakeland from the Fast Women podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, let's say, TechCrunch this week.
And let's start with Nicole this time.
Okay. I have two vehicles to talk about because it's been a little while.
That's good because Robbie and I have basically the same vehicle to talk about.
The same vehicle. So I'll add the variety to the show today. Should I start with super cool, fancy EV or super fun, tiny little sports car?
Go with EV first, then sports car, because then we have EVs.
Okay. I'm going to shuffle papers around. So what I have in my driveway this very moment is the 2023 Genesis GV60 Performance, which is...
Oh, so it's got the boost button?
Yeah, that's the boost button. the fun button. Yeah, it's yeah, it has the boost button. So the first thing is you can't get this most of the country. It is literally available in 8 states: Arizona, California, Connecticut, New Jersey, Nevada, Utah, Washington. Was that 8? That's it. That's where it's available. You get 8 states. So I can't even get this here. The closest I could get this to New Hampshire, I guess, would be Connecticut. So I'm driving a unicorn. It doesn't exist in my state. but I genuinely love this. It is not a cheap car. The base trim, the standard one, is $59,290. The performance version that I have, which has more horsepower and a greater range, it's got 429 horsepower and 235 miles of range, is $68,290. It's not cheap. Let's do our bets. Destination, gentlemen, how much?
Ooh.
$1,295.
$1,100.
Oh, you both failed. You both went over this time.
Oh,
but Robbie, you were really close. It was $1,095. That's just heartbreaking. You were that close, man. Coming up on stage. So $1,095 for destination. So it's, but the thing is, this is, first, it's an EV, and you know, EVs generally run more expensive than, you know, the gas versions of the cars that exist, although this is just an electric. And it's a luxury car, and it feels like one in every sense of the word. Like, it looks, it's beautifully styled. It looks a little different. It has really aggressive looking wheels. They're very angular, and just when you see it, all the, it's like these, it makes me think of lightning bolts. I love how the wheels look on this thing. Pew pew. Yeah, I love how this looks. So it has great styling. It looks really, really good. Unbelievably comfortable car to ride in. Hubby is 6'3", and I had him sitting there. I'm like, are you comfy in it? Because he heals all those, you know, those points where, Robbie, you're tall, your knees hit the console or hit the door or whatever, and suddenly what's great for everybody else is not comfy for tall people. He loved this. I love this. It is so much fun to drive. And little boost button, that's pretty cool. A little extra, like, boom, a little extra juice, and you just fly. Oh, the thing is, you don't need the boost button. Like, it is so, it has that EV acceleration. So you just go.
You kind of forget it's there. That's what I'm like, oh yeah, that's there. That's a thing, right? Still.
Like, I tried it because I'm like, oh, I should push this. And I'm like, I don't need that. One of the most fun parts of driving this, though, my husband has been in an EV before, and he drove a Tesla years ago. So he knows what it feels like to have an EV accelerate and what they're like. My daughter has never been in an EV. She's been in plug-in hybrids, but never just straight up electric vehicle. So when we went to get on the highway, I just absolutely mashed the accelerator, and her reaction was fantastic. It was like, whoa. She's like, oh, I want one of these now. Like, suddenly she's all in on the EV lifestyle.
That's how it happens.
Yep. So I like this. I am sad that it is such limited availability, and I don't know when Genesis plans to expand it, because like every EV right now is stupid limited availability. But because this is their top trim, it comes with all the fancy that you would expect, has all the safety features. You know, there's power front seats, and they're bolstered. There's even heated rear seats, which we went out with friends last night. It's the first time in their lives they ever saw that. And they're like, why do you do that? And I'm like, are you telling me you wouldn't want heated rear seats? He's like, no, I guess that, yes, I would. Now I do. I didn't until I got in the car with you guys to go to dinner. Now I need to get a car with heated rear seats, you know? So it has all of the fancy. There's a 12.3-inch touchscreen display, and it's sort of goes right into the instrument cluster. So it looks like one giant screen, but it's really two that kind of attach to it, like are blended together. And this is neat. They call it the crystal sphere shifter. And it's this giant.
This is the thing that when they first showed images of this thing back early this year, we were trying to figure it out, because the
what
images.
The heck?
Some shots showed it one way, some shots showed it a different way. We couldn't figure out how this thing worked.
So have you seen it since? I
saw it at the Mama Spring Rally.
So what it is, for everybody at home who's like, what? So when you look on the center console, there is this, I don't know, how big is it? It's pretty big, maybe like
3.5-4 inches.
Yeah, I'd say 3 to 4 inches.
It's larger than it's larger than a cue ball.
Yeah.
It's about the size of between a baseball and a softball.
Okay, yeah. So between a baseball and a softball, and it sits there. And when you get in the car, it is literally just a crystal sphere. And if you mess with the ambient lighting, it glows whatever color you picked. Currently, mine is glowing pink because that's what my daughter picked. So it's this like glowing pink sphere on the center console. As soon as you turn the car on, it rotates back. Like, it's almost like as if it was, think like a lid. It just goes flip, and it flips. You're looking at the bottom side, of your crystal sphere. And on the bottom side, it's the gear shift. So it has a dial with little like indents for your finger so you can select the gears. As soon as you put it back, put it in park, it stays there. But as soon as you turn the engine off, it goes back to being your crystal sphere shifter.
Jared from Genesis explained to me that the reason they did that is so that it's immediately clear to you when you get in the car if it's on or off. If all you have is the sphere, then you know it's not turned on.
Yep. Right. And actually, you know, so at first you're thinking this is kind of why. And then I thought about it and that's exactly
ostentatious.
Yeah, like this is this weird, like I need a little crystal orb that spins around in my console. And then when I realized that it was like the on-off is what makes it flip from, you know, gear shift to fancy sphere, I was like, oh, that's actually really cool because you do have those moments when you're driving something in EV or if a plug-in hybrid and you think, wait. I did turn it off when I get out of the car, right? So you can literally just glance inside, crystal sphere, you're good. Gear shift, no, you didn't. So it's like a little over the top and a little crazy. It kind of works for this being a luxury car. And it does actually remind you like, hey, doofus, turn off the car.
Turn off the car, doofus.
Turn off the car. So I like this. Like I genuinely will be sad when they take this away from me on Monday because I'm thoroughly enjoying driving this. Mm.
And the powertrain that's in this one is the same as what's in the Kia EV6 GT.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to actually driving the EV6 GT because I really like the EV6.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, with that extra power in there, I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's a pretty big power, Jim. I don't know if I said the numbers in the standard GV60. So it's 429 horsepower in the performance. It's 314 in the standard. So it's not a small jump. It's a big jump, you know? So I would get the performance. It's like a lot more money, but if I'm going to spend $60,000 in a car, what's an extra $8,000?
So exactly. If you're going to spend $70,000, would you take the GV60 performance or a Model Y performance?
Oh, I just literally asked my husband this question. I literally asked him that we were driving home from our dinner tonight. It's hard because I like this because I like how the interior looks. Like the interior, this feels like a luxury car. The leathers, and, the accents.
And a reminder, that's where you live.
Yes. So all of this, like it feels like luxury. Not that the Tesla doesn't feel like luxury, but it's not fancy. Like it's this very, I don't want to say it's Swedish because it's not Swedish, but you know how like Volvos are always very nice.
It's minimalist. Sort of
this minimalist. Thank you.
But it doesn't feel premium though.
No, it definitely doesn't feel premium. This Genesis, it feels like a premium vehicle in every way. The Tesla, it doesn't feel like cheap and junky, but it definitely doesn't feel as premium as the Genesis. So if you want a real premium experience, go with Genesis. If you want a Tesla, go with a Tesla. But I think the Genesis holds more appeal. My husband said the reverse. And the reason he said that was because he just likes the aesthetic of the Tesla. And he would go with the Tesla. I'm like, okay.
I like having a dash cluster though.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And radar and ultrasonic sensors.
Yeah.
You know, just things.
Those things that you can't get on a Tesla anymore.
Those things, those like rando whatever things. So that was that's the car I have in the driveway right now. And I love it. I'm going to cry when they take it away. Some cars I'm happy when they take away. This, the Genesis, not so much.
What was the range?
The range is, the standard is 248 miles. The performance is 235.
Okay.
So, I mean, not this like outstanding crazy range, but again, 235, that's going to get you through almost, how often do you drive more than 235 miles in a day? Probably not unless you're on a road trip. And then I don't think you should take any EV these days because the charging is just too wonky.
I did last week too.
I know, but I have really bad luck. The few times I've driven a long way, I haven't been able to find chargers. They are full or they're broken. And I got cranky. I'm like, fine.
I
got cranky. I'll admit it. I was like,
You don't want cranky Nicole.
No, you don't, trust me. Those of you who have witnessed.
Not on a road trip anyway.
Not on a road trip. Not anytime, but especially not on a road trip. So the other car that I had was the all new 2022 Subaru BRZ.
BRZ.
BRZ. Which is so different than the GV60. Like, nothing is totally different customers, totally different everything. So this is a small, fun, sporty car that barely seats two people. My husband was not happy with his pretzel status when he tried to get into the front seat of this. we didn't drive.
You just started doing more yoga.
I guess. And we couldn't take it someplace because literally there, I mean, there is technically seating in the back. My daughter's like, no.
No.
Yeah.
No, there are seat belts and then there's upholstery. There are not things that could actually be used as seats.
Right. So there's, make no mistake, this is a two-person vehicle with a really large cargo area behind you for your purse and your groceries and whatever else you want to throw back there. So completely different vehicle. 2.4 liter four-cylinder engine, 222 horsepower, 184 pound-feet of torque. What I like about this is, you know, you're buying a performance car and sometimes there's this balance between like, we're going to give you all this power. We're just going to give you power, 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 power. But the handling and the suspension and the rest of the car doesn't live up to that. So you have this car with tons of performance, but it's not fun to drive because they get kind of unwieldy if you get the least bit aggressive with having some fun with that horsepower, not speeding, just like aggressive acceleration, taking corners, things the car should be able to do. This handles really nicely. It's like, it's a good balance between the performance and the handling and the precision that you want from something that's sporty. It's beautiful inside. It has like, I love it when cars have this stuff. Like this one has, this is the Limited and it has ultra suede with red stitching. And there's, you know, leather bolsters and there's the floor mats have red stitching on them too. And you've got aluminum pedal covers. So it has all the visual that you want to open the door and go, yeah, my car's a sports car. Like it looks the part and it feels the part. It was fun to drive. It is not the kind of car that you want to take on a road trip because I think any sports car, really, if you drive it too far, eventually the harshness of it can get to you because there's a certain amount of harshness when you make a really good performance sporty car.
I mean, it's not like you need your kidneys.
No, I mean, whatever. Like, yeah,
that's what they made dialysis machines for.
Exactly.
Right, for people who have sports cars and drive them too much. But as a fun, like, it's just a fun car. And if you're driving, not planning on road tripping in something like this, it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was a hoot to drive and considerably more affordable than our Genesis. It is $30,495. Okay, go again. Destination on this one.
$995.
I'm gonna say $895.
Robbie wins again. $960.
Oh,
you were so close.
Boiled again.
It's always you gotta let Roberto go first and bid under him. That's the trick. He's got a system. Trick.
Roberto goes, and then I bid $1.
And then you bid $1.
Yeah, then you bid $1.
So two very different vehicles, but I liked both of them for very different reasons. And the person who'd be buying these would be entirely different. I think it was neat just because you think there's so many vehicles in the market and having these two back to back, you see how there's such different people these are for. And each one does what it's supposed to do perfectly for the people that it's made for.
I think this is for the same person. That person is me because you? I own a BRZ and I really like the EGMP platform. Yeah. And so the BRZ I drive for fun. That's my fun. Whee! See? That's why the car driver, how's that my go? Drive around car. Whee! Okay. That's my fun driving around drifting car. And then I have a nice EV for the rest of the time where I have to do things and I need
this
to go fast.
So basically what they were doing is like Genesis and Subaru teamed up when they were sending these to me.
Oh, what's Robbie
like,
want?
It's like a match set. She can convince everybody. Yeah.
So did you have the automatic or the manual?
I had the manual.
Oh,
yay!
That's the best one.
That was close.
It was very fun. Yeah, no, it was very, very fun. I enjoyed it.
That would have been so disappointing, though. Here's the automatic. You're like,
wah, wah. So yeah, so I had the manual, which was super fun. I mean, you get so few manual transmissions anymore. You know,
I know.
They're going away. They're just like goodbye. So
and when
farewell.
And when we have just EVs, that's all we'll have. We'll have no more manuals, probably.
Yep, they'll be gone. Yeah, limited runs for all of these, regardless of the car. Yep.
Get them while you can.
Stock up. Well, yeah, no one's buying them anyway.
I know. No one's buying them.
I like to think people are like, oh, we got to go get all the manuals. No, they're not buying their manuals.
No,
that's
the
problem. You're only going to get them in enthusiast cars going forward, like this and the Miata.
Well, and even enthusiast cars, like enthusiasts don't know how to drive these things. You know, there's more and more people that like really enjoy cars. Like, I don't know how to drive a manual, you know?
They only know how to use paddles.
Yeah, well, paddle shifters, which is totally different.
Yeah.
Although I had someone try to argue, well, I can drive the, you know, I drive with the paddle shifters, is the same. I'm like, no, it's not.
No, it's all about using three pedals with 2 feet.
Exactly. If you're if you don't have to have do the move the gear shift around with one hand and then move your feet around with the other, you are not doing it. No, it doesn't count.
And you know what? If you like paddle shifters over a manual, it's fine.
Yeah. If that's what you like, you're like, yes, no judgment.
I don't care. You're
just
fine.
Get a car you like. If you like manuals, if you like paddle shifters, if you like an automatic, have at it. It's your car. It's your money. Buy the thing that sparks joy.
But don't complain about how there are no automatics, or make fun of people who don't complain about there are no more manuals, and don't complain about people who can't drive a manual. If A, you haven't taught someone how to drive a manual, or B, you don't own a manual. Yeah. You don't get to make fun of people who don't drive manuals if you don't have a manual.
I've taught my several of my daughters can't, but because they just, one is like, no, the other one tried and we stalled the Subaru 890,000 times. And, you know, she tried it in a parking lot at the high school, but I've taught several of their friends who were like, I got to save money. I got to buy a car with a manual transmission, or the car that was my hand-me-down is going to be a manual. Can you teach me, Mrs. Wakeland? I'm like, yes.
Do you think it was easier because they weren't your kid? Cause I think there's, it's a bit more difficult people are related. I think people are less likely to listen to like a family member or a spouse that they would listen to like a stranger or someone they sort of know.
I think the kids that I taught that were friends of my kids were like in that though, like I must learn this. Like this is either the car I'm getting or the car that's being handed down to me and I have to learn to drive this.
You didn't have a choice.
I'm out of luck. Whereas with my Rose, my older daughter was just like, no, thank you. And my younger daughter tried, but there was no sense of like, if I don't learn this, I can't drive. Mm. So I think she genuinely tried. I think she could have gotten it, but we'd have to like own a manual and have her drive it a lot for her
You should have been like, this is your car and it's a manual.
Yeah, exactly. There you go, sweetie.
Yeah. The older kid, you know, she learned to drive a manual. She didn't get a car with a manual transmission, but she knew how to drive a manual. And then when she got a job where she needed to drive cars with manuals, I gave her a refresher lesson and then she was all good after that. And she's fine with it now. The younger one, after one lesson, said, nope, I'm done. No more.
Yeah. You know, totally fine.
But to what you said, Robbie, I think, you know, especially with parents and kids, you know, I think especially, you know, when they're at that age, when they're learning to drive, I think they are even more rebellious than usual. And
There's so much going on in your teenage brain.
It's a very, very stressful situation.
It's hard. Yeah. It is really hard. Yeah.
I taught my wife how to drive a manual in San Francisco, and her dad had tried to teach her when she was a teenager, and it just didn't work. And I taught her, and because the car we had was a manual. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and so I taught her, and she, you know, a few days we drove around like one part of the city where it's flatter, it's not flat, and she just learned, and now she drives, you know, she drove a manual up until we got the Kona. And so I think the difference, my parents didn't have to teach me. I grew up riding motorcycles. So in my stupid idiot teenager brain, I thought it was just some genius because I could get into a manual car and drive it. It's like years later, I'm like, oh, it's not exactly the same because you're using your hand instead of your foot, it's like the same, everything's pretty much the same. The fundamentals are the same. So I was just like, look at me.
Shift.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Clutch. Like, it was like, you know, after a few tries, I was like, oh, I got this. I'm like, look at me. I'm so good. I'm like, not really.
But the two things you should get somebody else to teach to your kids, driving a manual and algebra. Yeah.
I was okay with the algebra.
Oh boy. If driving a manual was tough, the tears that were shed with trying to do algebra. Kids were even worse.
And they tried more than I did. Can you imagine?
All right.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, Visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kids,
what have you been driving, Robbie?
So I was driving the 2022 BMW i4 M50. This is the first electric M vehicle from BMW. It is their i4. It's their 4-series sedan, and they just sort of shoved an electric powertrain
actually,
in there.
4-series Grand Coupe.
It's the Grand Coupe. It has a hatchback. That's all that really matters. It has rear seats,
which is actually excellent.
So you can open the rear door and you can like look at the seats and like, oh man, if I had a toddler, I could put them in there. But they are nicer than the rear seats in the BRZ, which are impossible to get in, get out. Everything about the BRZ rear seats. I put my dog in there once, scarred him for life.
In the back
of the BRZ, yeah, because for some reason I had to take him somewhere, and that's the only car I had at the time. Whoa, cats are attacking me. i4 M50. I drove this car once before in Germany, and I really liked it then, and I've driven it. I did like a 500-mile road trip Saturday and Sunday with it, and I've been driving it, almost a week before, a few days before that, the week since, and every day I like this car a little bit more. I think BMW did a great job both with the powertrain. They're using a different electric motor than everyone else, well, other than Nissan. They're not using magnets in their motors. They're not using permanent magnets. They're using electric.
It's an AC induction motor.
Boom, that. So they're using that. But it drives so well and it handles really well. And they do such a great job sort of mitigating that heft, that extra 850-ish pounds of weight differential between this and the 4-series with an all-wheel drive. It's 850 pounds heavier, so, you're having to deal with all that. But, yeah, it does such a great job. And we were shooting video with it yesterday, and the roads around my house are very twisty and fun, but they're also not very well maintained. I mean, they're not Detroit roads, but they're very like bumpy and, whereas if you go over to Marin, they're also twisty, but they're nice and smooth. And so with some vehicles, I drive them on these roads and you can feel them just sort of skipping around and bouncing around. And this thing is just planted so well on those roads compared to some other cars that I've driven, like Aston Martin's, like a Vantage. It did better than the Vantage on these roads. And so, yeah, no, I really, really like it. It's super, 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds. It's, It's pretty great. Yeah. And I just talked to some, I went and got some tacos because Taco-tober. So I went and got some tacos today, and I got out of the car. I plugged it into a charger while I was there. And these two gentlemen came up and they were talking to me about it. And they're like, oh, is this an electric car? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, I didn't know BMW made one of these as electric. And yeah, it's nice because A, it's not an SUV. B, it's a proper M. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it has 227 miles of range. But in my test, I got 238, which I was really impressed with. I did my long distance drive. And you know, it charged fine. It turns out there's more 350 kilowatt chargers away from my house than near my house. And yeah, you pull over, you charge. I eat more Mexican food, and then get back in the car is what I did. It's nice that you throw it in comfort mode or Eco Pro, and it's just a nice, comfortable BMW. It's comfortable. It's got that BMW luxury. You know, it's nice, but it's not overly nice where you feel weird eating inside of it. You know, some cars are so nice you're like, oh, I don't want to eat in here. Like, this is like, it's nice, but I could eat a burger, it's fine. So the vehicle I had, let's see, the starting price is wrong on the Monroney. Hold on, the starting price now is $67,300, so it's not cheap for the but with that you get 536 horsepower, which is nice. So you got that going for you. But the one I got with the total retail price, $82,820.
Wow.
So not cheap. You know, they had the high performance package with the 20-inch wheels, and then the heated steering wheel pack and the parking assist package, and then the driver's assistance with the traffic jam assistance, where if you're going under 40 miles an hour, you can go hands-free while you're on a highway. So that's kind of nice, you know, when you're cruising around. I don't know if that's, you know, if you do a lot of gridlock driving, I mean, it's fine, I guess. But I don't think it's worth the $1,700, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really, really liked this vehicle. Oh, it's, you guys can check, pick. Sam, my probably already has it. The destination charge.
He's cheating. I'm gonna go with, $1,380.
$1.
$1. Sam wins at $1. It's $995.
Oh.
And this
Sam,
one comes.
You win. See, comes, you get it now.
It comes all the way from Munich, Germany. It comes all the way from the other part of the world. It's only
the Genesis came all the way from Korea.
That's true. The Genesis does come all the way from Korea. What's going on over there with Ford?
Well, Stellantis is still the worst.
Oh, Stellantis.
They're charging crazy. $2,000 for delivery.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a 400 volt architecture. It's not, you know, the next generation new class. But they've maxed it out, so it charges at 200 kilowatts. So that's nice when you're doing long distance drives. Like Sam and I were with the vehicle, and it's, I don't know. You guys got any questions?
No, I never tried BMWs. Like, they just,
well, you can live vicariously through Sam.
I know you both have one. I'm like, dang it. I feel really cheated.
You know, I hadn't driven a Genesis in a long time until I drove that GV60. And then I was like, these are the best cars ever made.
I should theoretically, it's, the i4 eDrive 40 is up for North American Car of the Year. So I'm hoping that I get to drive one.
You got
to
get in there.
Well, we do a drive in Detroit in a week and a half. And so hopefully they have it there, and I'll get some time to drive it there.
You'll probably get to drive the same one that I was driving.
Probably the same exact.
Yeah, that seems like a good segue.
You have to put
Sam, what were you driving?
Yeah.
I also had an i4, but I had the base eDrive 40, as Nicole mentioned, which only has one motor on the rear axle, no front motor on this one. So it is a mere 335 horsepower, which is still quite more than adequate, and 317 foot-pounds of torque. The one I had the M Sport package, which is a few thousand dollars.
It's like, hey, you got an M car. No, you don't.
No, it sort of looks like an M, but not really. but it had the 19-inch wheels on there. And so the EPA range rating for the eDrive 40 with the 19-inch wheels is 282 miles. And I had to go to Chicago last week to be on a panel at the MAMA Chicago Drives Electric event. And from my home to the hotel in Chicago was 265 miles. So I could have made it on a charge. And in fact, it turns out I actually could have made it. And you know, the 282 miles, that is the combined city highway range. So normally for, you know, highway driving, it's going to be somewhat lower than that. So
probably
would have been closer to about 260, 265. So it would have been right on the edge. But it turns out that the energy efficiency I was getting was actually quite a bit better than what is the rated efficiency for this thing. The rated efficiency on fueleconomy.gov is 34 kilowatt hours per 100 miles, which works out to about 2.95 miles per kilowatt hour. And I was averaging, you know, driving at highway speeds or, you know, driving with the flow of traffic on I-94, which might have been at highway speed. You know, it was at some speed. I was getting about 3.3 miles per kilowatt hour. So I was doing significantly better than the rated efficiency.
Because I was getting 2.9 when I did my mileage run.
Yeah.
Which was, I was like, well, I mean, it's not super efficient, but it's also an M car.
Right. Well, and you know, you've got extra weight because you get the front motor, yeah, and you had the 20-inch wheels, which are even larger. The standard wheels on the eDrive 40 are 18s. I had the optional 19s. You had 20s on yours. And so every time you go up a size in wheels, you've got more rotational inertia, more rolling resistance. So it's going to be an efficiency hit. So I was actually pleasantly surprised at how well it was doing on efficiency. You know, I did end up making a stop about halfway, just because I needed to take a pit stop anyway. So I did a 10-minute stop on the way there. I did about a 15-minute stop on the way back to grab some dinner, and you know, did a quick charge while I was eating my Five Guys burger in Kalamazoo, and got there and back no problem at all. And when I was in Chicago, I went to a 350 kilowatt EVgo station that was not far from my hotel. It was cranking along at about 157 kilowatts. I didn't get, that's about as high as it got for me.
So close.
But, you know, in the time it took me to walk, I don't know, a couple of blocks from where the charger was to grab a burrito and then come back or eat the burrito and come back, you know, it was charged from 10 to 92%. So it was, you know, it was all good. Like you, I really enjoyed this car. I like the size of this car. I'm not quite as tall as you are, Robbie. So with the driver's seat set for my 5'11 frame, I was able to sit reasonably comfortably in the back seat behind where I was sitting.
We got to remember, I'm all legs too. My torso is about 5 inches tall. I'm all arm and legs.
And I'm the opposite. I have a long torso and my legs are not quite as long. So for me, the back seat worked great. There was no problem at all. And I love the fact that it's a hatchback because, you know, on these coupe shaped sedan shaped cars, you know, where it's basically a fastback, you know, if it has a trunk, like, you know, say something like the Model 3, where it's got a trunk lid, what you end up with is a very small opening to get stuff in there. And, yeah, you know, it's kind of annoying if you want to put anything large in there. So with the hatchback, you've got this whole big area that opens up. You can fold the back seats down. You can put lots of big stuff in there when you need to, and you know, still have room for a couple of adults, you know, to ride in there when you need to. So I was really pleasantly surprised with this thing. The lane keeping assist worked very very nicely. And when I got into Chicago traffic, where things were going much slower. I was, you know, below 40 miles an hour. I was able to use the hands-free drive assist plus feature. So there's like an iPhone, there's, if you look at the instrument cluster display, there's a little notch in there where the infrared camera is that keeps an eye on you to make sure you're watching the road. And anytime you're below 40 miles an hour on the highway, you can engage drive assist plus, and then, just go hands-free and just, you know, kind of cruise along in stop and go traffic on I-94 or in and around Chicago, or 294 around Chicago, or any of the Chicago highways, which is what it typically is like. So, you know, it's not a whole lot different from being on the 101 or the 405.
Yeah, you're sort of like, all right, you stare at traffic. That's sort of your job. Yeah. You're going so slow, to me, I'm like, okay, this seems less of an issue to me, but I'm just sort of staring at traffic. I'm like, well, this is kind of nice because I'm stuck in traffic, but then I ended up just putting my hands on the wheel anyway. I'm like, where am I about to put them? They just sit in my lap. I'm like, okay.
So the i4 eDrive 40 starts at $55,400. As equipped with the M Sport package, which was $2,400 and an assortment of other options. The bottom line, including the $995 delivery charge, came to $69,720. You could probably forego things like the M Sport package and even the driver's assist pro package, which is $1,700 for that hands-free capability. You know, and you could get, you know, a pretty nicely equipped i4, you know, for in the $60,000 range, and be pretty happy with it. So I really enjoyed this car, and I would highly recommend it as something if you're looking for a premium, you know, smaller to midsize, you know, sedan style car, an actual car, not a crossover, not an SUV, but a car. I really like the size of this car. It's just the perfect size for me.
Oh yeah, and you know what? I could fit my talking about that trunk and the fact that it's a hatchback is I could put my guitar. I put my guitar back there. I put my guitar amp. I was going up to a show in Yosemite. Was one of the part of like one leg of the trip I did over the weekend, and I was just like in my two backpacks. And like I just kept cramming things into the trunk. I mean,
if you're not playing in a Rush cover band, you could probably even fit the drum kit in there.
Oh yeah, yeah. As long as you're not in a Rush cover band, you're gonna need two i4s. One just for Roto Toms.
Well, I think for a Rush cover band, you need like a full size high roof Transit or something like that.
Just for the drums.
Just for the drum kit.
Just for the drums.
Yeah. all right, so that is two i4s, the BRZ and the Genesis GV60. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. And Nicole has magically appeared back again.
I don't have my laptop's like, I'm taking a break. Be right back. I'm like, what just happened?
you were stuck on like, you had a weird face and it froze on your weird face. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it just, it's everything rebooted. I was like, what is happening? So.
All right. Well, since we last all gathered together, Ford has released their next generation Super Duty pickups, which is probably their most profitable vehicle in terms of profit margin in their lineup. And you know, this is everything from the F-250 on up to the F-600 or 650 or 700. They're all based on this basic architecture. Yeah, I mean, it still looks like a big Ford pickup truck.
Which giant is Super Duty.
Which is what you would expect.
People want. Really? Yeah,
more grill, but it does have some neat features in it. Well, first of all, you know, I think Picasso first said, you know, good artists borrow, great artists steal. So, you know, Ford did some stealing from Chevy and GMC for this one. One of the features they added in here, the little side step cutout in the side of the bed ahead of the rear wheels and the steps in the rear bumper, which GM has had for quite a few years now on their big pickup trucks. But there's some, and of course, you know, they brought in all the new stuff from the latest F-150, like the cookie table.
Thank you. Yay. The cookie table.
Burrito. It's the burrito table. It depends on what part of the country you're in.
Really. Yeah, here it's a cookie table.
But on the Super Duties, you don't have to have the fold down shifter because the Super Duties have a column shifter. So you can just flip the cookie table or burrito table over anytime you want. You don't have to wait till you're in park. You got the full recline seats and all that other good stuff. All the nice little features in there. You got Pro Power on board. But there's some other neat tech features. Like one of the things they have is for towing. When you're towing a big trailer, you can get a set of cameras that go on the sides and the back of the trailer, so you can get your full 360 bird's eye view that you normally get from the cameras on the vehicle, but also include the trailer in it. So when you're maneuvering a trailer, you can get that 360 bird's eye view even with a 30-foot trailer hanging off the back of your truck.
That's gonna save some scrapes and
like
dents.
A superhero.
Yeah. If you're moving around with the tailgate down, normally the rear backup camera,
you get that cool picture of the ground.
But on the Super Duty, they added an extra camera and extra ultrasonic sensors in the top edge of the tailgate. So if you have the tailgate down, so like if you're maneuvering to hook up a fifth wheel trailer, now you have a backup camera that's still facing in the direction it should be instead of that view
that's
of the ground.
That's clever. I like that. That's clever.
Yeah. So let's see, what other neat features did they add? 5G, 5G modem in here for the first time.
All the G's.
All the G's you can get. Yeah. We want all the G's.
The i4s that we talked about, they already have 5G, but this will be the first Ford with 5G. There's a new engine in here, a new gas engine. They've ditched the old 6.2 liter V8, and they introduced a new 6.8 liter V8, which is basically a slightly downsized version of the 7.3 that they launched a couple of years ago. So this is a pushrod naturally aspirated V8, 385 horsepower, 385 horsepower was the old 6.2. The 7.3 makes 430.
Yeah.
So they haven't given us power numbers for the 6.8 yet, but it'll probably be somewhere in between there. So probably somewhere around 380 to 400 horsepower. What else? Because a lot of these trucks, especially the bigger ones, the 450s and 550s, they sell them as chassis cabs. They get bought by utilities and things like that to turn them into bucket trucks and crane trucks. So one of the things that they've incorporated in here as part of their QVM program, their Qualified Vehicle Modifier program, is when they put this extra equipment on the back of the truck, they can now actually go into the Sync 4 system that's in here, and they can program buttons on the touchscreen interface to control things like the bucket or the crane.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So they don't have to wire up separate switches for all this stuff. They can do it right from the screen. So there's a developer program for that. So that's pretty cool.
Neat.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's designed for the people who use these things to work.
People who are really working, not hauling air, as the saying goes. People who really need a truck this big.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an F-250 dually platinum, and we were behind it, and I told my wife, Mike, that truck, $150,000. She's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. You never know how expensive trucks are until you know something about trucks. Like, you just seem like, pickup truck, $20. You're like, no, that's a six-figure car right there.
It's the platinum. 250 and a dually.
That's some big bucks.
Had to throw some extra. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember having a platinum F450 dually like 10, 11 years ago that was almost $100,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, and, crazy, and they've only gotten more expensive since then. So that's the Ford Super Duty. Speaking of big, heavy trucks.
Yes.
Our friends at TFL Truck.
Speaking of duty.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. Ooh. Here all week. Hey.
Roman Micah, the proprietor at TFL Truck and a friend of ours, he had a little adventure this week with a Hummer EV that they just bought.
Yes, he did.
Not a good adventure either.
No, an adventure I think he'd preferred not have given an opportunity.
Yeah, this was not about going out in the wilderness and, you know, driving sideways with the crab mode.
Going to his fancy little ranch situation that he's created with all of his trails and testing ground. Nope, not that
this,
at all.
This was on the street in a left turn lane. And the Hummer said, nope, I'm good. I'm done. I'm not going anywhere else.
Have a nice day. Goodbye, Roman.
See you later.
Adios. So to the moon.
So we'll have a link in the show notes to the YouTube video. But basically... what happened was a fault indicator came up on the instrument cluster, and you know, said there was some kind of steering fault. You know, you should pull over and get the truck serviced now. And so he stopped in a left turn lane. He was in traffic and figured, okay, well, I'll just turn it off and cycle the ignition, so to speak, and then turn it back on and, you know, see if the lamp, if the fault
signal
goes away.
Turning it off and on again has long been great advice for all sorts of technologies.
Exactly. So
everything works,
except, you know, that works great if it will actually turn back on again. Not what happened this time.
Yeah.
And you know, I think when we were talking about the Lucid Air a few weeks ago, when I talked about how the infotainment system locked up on me, and in that case, I was able to turn it off and turn it back on again, but that didn't actually fix it at first. And there was a kind of a sequence I had to go through. Well, Roman ended up calling his son and, you know, trying to look up because the owner, there's no physical owner's manual in the truck. It's all digital.
And the
infotainment
system.
Right.
It seems great until it's like you have tech issues. It's like, but the answer is in the tech that won't work, right. Guys.
Exactly. You're like, how to restart your truck. Oh, no.
Yep.
So, you know, Tommy found a bunch of different things to try, and they tried all those things and none of that worked. And so they were going to try to disconnect the 12 volt battery, except the 12 volt battery is in the frunk. And to open the frunk, you have to press a button on the touchscreen.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my
but
God. What a
more physical buttons.
So like, this sounds kind of funny now, but I'm imagining the time.
Poor Roman.
This took Roman almost an hour.
To be honest, this is content for Roman, though.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm sure. Yeah.
So for him, it's got almost 400,000 views on the video.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's irritating, but at the same time, he's like, oh, this is going to do so well.
This is gold, man.
Yeah.
This is gold.
It's gold.
But it turns out that there is actually a manual release for the frunk lid.
Cool.
But you have to reach way up underneath the left-hand side of the dashboard. Way up there, there's a little loop, little wire loop that you grab and pull.
How did they find this out?
They found it online. It's doing a Google search. Oh, and so reaching up under the dashboard there, they found the loop, gave it a yank, got the hood open, disconnected the battery, let it sit for a minute, hooked it back up again. And then, you know, it started up, but it still wouldn't, the shifter was still locked. And then instructions came up on the instrument cluster what to do next, and said, okay, open and then close the driver's side window. Okay, now open and close the passenger side window. Now the left rear window. Now the right rear window. Now press the brake pedal for 20 seconds. And they actually had to do this twice before it would finally unlock the transmission.
Seriously, because, that's the combination of left foot, right foot.
Yeah, because by that time, a flatbed had arrived to tow them back to the dealer, except that it was stuck in park, so they couldn't even roll it onto
they
the
just,
float bed.
Just
Well, and this is a 9,400-pound truck.
Oh my god!
Flappy just flips absurd. Over on top of it.
Why is it such a bizarro combat? What?
It's so people don't act. It's so you don't accidentally do it. Like I got a McLaren once, what the air brake was malfunctioning, and to like. If the car threw an air brake malfunction, I had like stop the car, open and close the door, and it has those golf, you know, those
yeah, the gullwing doors.
Gullwing. So I'd like open a door, close a door, push a button, turn a thing, call my mom, like sing a song.
It's all dance. Different.
But it's funny because in the olden days when your augmented transmission would lock when it gets stuck. There's just a little slit, and you just shoved a key or something in there.
Boom. Screwdriver in there, and
screwdriver.
Then
Yeah. Now you gotta do the contra extra lives code.
Oh my god.
The Konami code.
It's a Konami down, code
left,
for your car.
Up, down, left, right, select, start, A A B A B A A B start.
Yeah, Google Konami code. Restart my car.
Yeah. So this is the downside of software-defined vehicles. Yeah.
Yes.
When you put everything into software instead of having physical buttons and switches for some of the basic stuff.
Mm-hmm. And a paper manual.
And a paper manual, yes. This is where you end up. So once they got the transmission unlocked, the truck would actually move on its own. So they were actually able to, they didn't actually have to put it on the flatbed. They were able to drive it. Although once they got it going, they just put it in drive. And then did not put it in park or neutral or reverse again at that point. They didn't want to risk it getting
don't
stuck
turn it
somewhere
off.
Again.
Don't just get keep, in too
just
roughly.
Just keep it going till
don't
it gets to the dealer.
Too hard.
Yeah.
We've all driven a car like that though. They weren't brand new. We've all had the hand-me-down of a hand-me-down of a hand-me-down where something goes wrong. You're like, okay. Just got to do this one thing. Don't do it. Okay.
Here just please go 5 more miles. Please go 5 more miles.
There's a lot of praying. There's a lot. Yeah. I had a friend who had rigged like the wire, the accelerator. This is what he told me is that the accelerator cable in his bug had snapped from. So in order to, I don't know how he did it or why he did it. He had to get the accelerator and use his hand. He'd run like a rope to the cable and was trying to get home. And like, we lived in the mountains. So he had to go up the mountain to get home.
Oh,
it was like,
my God.
Like pulling on the accelerator to get it to go while driving with, it's like, oh.
Good times.
Yeah. All right. So if you're planning to get a Hummer EV, you might want to watch this video beforehand so you know how to get it out of park when it's stuck.
For a few quick tips.
All right. Continuing with the GM Ultium platform EV theme, Honda released first images of its upcoming Prologue this week. And the Prologue is the electric crossover that's coming in 2024 that Honda designed the body for, and GM is building based on the same Ultium platform that's going to be under it's probably based on the same stuff as the Blazer and the Equinox. And in all likelihood, it'll probably be built in Ramos alongside in Mexico alongside the Blazer and Equinox. No specs on it yet, other than we know that it is a little bit bigger than the CRV. Kind of smaller than a Pilot, or a Passport, bigger than a CRV. It's battery electric. One interesting thing about this, since it's not coming till 2024, one of the things that Honda has said is, with the new CRV that's just launching now, they're planning to have about 50% of the CRVs they build this time are going to be hybrids. And they're going to offer a special shorter term 2-year lease deal for CRV hybrid buyers that want to then be able to transition to the Prologue when it comes out in 2 years.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah. So if you're looking forward to a Prologue, you can lease a CRV hybrid right now for 2 years and then trade it in on a Prologue when it finally arrives.
That's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about the Prologue is I think it looks very much like the Honda E, not the E-Honda, which is a character from Street Fighter. The front end, like, it resembles the Honda E. You can see sort of the same basic design features. When I pointed, and they talked about it, but the concept didn't look as much like the Honda E. And when I pointed that out to Honda during a briefing, they're like, nah. So I feel like maybe am I the only person who sees that, who sees like it looks more like the Honda E than the concept did? Or am I drunk?
You mean well, the rendering that they released a few months ago?
Yeah, the rendering. Yeah.
I think it does have this black plastic grille, but you know, the Honda E's got round headlights.
Well, yeah, but it still has that the front end without the obviously without the round headlights does sort of harken back to mm-hmm. that design language.
Yeah,
there's a more little sort of that in there.
There we go. Fine. I'm drunk. just say it. You're drunk.
You're drunk. Anyway, Robbie.
I like have another beer, Robbie.
I actually like the way this. I think this is the best looking Honda.
I like
SUV
this.
The best looking Honda SUV out there. Boom, done.
Yeah, it's got nice proportions to it. Yeah, you know? It actually in profile it kind of reminds me of the Volvo XC60.
It does look like a Volvo. Especially since they showed us the white picture, which is like, hey, you like a Volvo, huh?
And the Honda badge on the tailgate, I think is like that's the same kind of script they have on the E.
Yeah, I noticed that. That looks kind of cool. I like how the badge
says Honda instead of the logo.
No. Yeah,
I like that.
And it's
cool.
kind of more horizontally elongated letters.
Spaced out a little bit, stretch.
Yeah,
this makes me feel really good about what Honda is going to do with their E architecture. Because clearly they've like, okay, you know what? People want the Honda E. We're not going to give it to them in this country, but let's be real about this. And I think they've you know, in the last couple, like last year or so, they've been like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And so I think we'll see. You know, I know the long-term plan is Honda's going to be a hybrid company essentially. And Acura is going to be their EV. It's going to be like, you know, the EV company. And so Honda's Acura will be EV before Honda is, but from the looks of this, and I know it's on the Ultium platform, which except for that Hummer seems like a good Hummer. I dig it. I think I'm as a person who used to own a series of Hondas, I'm happy that Honda is doing this, and I'm glad that they work in with GM just to have something out before they have their E architecture. So at least people will look at Honda and be like, okay, cool. They think about the future.
There's an option. They're forward thinking. They're going to electrification. Yeah. Not just stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that two year lease thing, that's pretty dope.
Yeah. It's no, really that's clever. That is a good idea. I think, you know, tied people, keep people in the Honda family for now until they have something to offer them. That's a full battery electric.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're, you know, Honda people are—they're like Subaru people. They just continue to buy Hondas.
Honda after Honda.
There's like people in my neighborhood. All they have is Hondas. They have Hondas from like the '90s. They have like four Hondas, and one of them a CRX. It's a '92 CRX, all the way up to like they have a Fit. They have an Accord.
The entire Honda history in their driveway.
Yeah. They got all the Hondas, and I'm feeling like if they're going to go EV, they've probably been waiting for this.
Yep. All right. Last one, the Volvo EX90, which since we recorded previously, has been announced as the name. And Volvo is in the process of slowly trickling out a bunch of details. And we'll probably see something every week or every few days between now and November 9th when they finally show us the full production version of the EX90. So this is the all electric replacement for the XC90, you know, and we got a preview of the design direction last year with the Recharge concept, you know, which looks more like a lifted wagon than a traditional SUV, but that's fine. But there's some interesting tech in this one, especially the interior. But, you know, as they've said last year, I think, you know, they're going to have standard LiDAR on here as part of the driver assistance suite. And they'll have hands-free driving capability. But I think what's actually more interesting of what they told us so far is some of the interior stuff. Plus also the EX90 is going to have bidirectional charging capability. So like the F-150 Lightning, the VW ID. Buzz, and an increasing number of other new EVs, you'll have the ability to to run your house off the battery in this EV if you need to. But the interior stuff, they're going to have the infrared driver monitor system like you've got in GM and Ford and assorted other vehicles. But they're actually using two cameras. One's looking straight at you, the other one's at an angle looking at you. And they're doing more than just trying to detect if you're watching the road. You know, so they're looking for, you know, what they call visual distraction, which is you looking away from the road, looking down at your phone or looking at the screen or looking at somebody else in the car. But they're also looking to see if you might be drowsy, if you might be impaired, or if you actually have what they're calling cognitive distraction, which is you are looking at the road, and I'm sure, you know, I know I have. Everybody's probably been in this situation at some point when you're doing a long drive, you're staring down the highway, and your eyes are pointed at the road, but you're not really paying attention.
Like you wake up 45 minutes later and you're like, wait, how did I do that last 45 minutes?
Exactly. Yes. And you know, I'm trying to get an interview with somebody from Volvo to learn more about this. So hopefully we'll have sometime between now and November 9th, when they show off the EX90, we'll get that interview and include it in the show. But you know, they're sounds like they're doing some clever stuff to try and detect, you know, these other situations that might be safety issues when you should be driving. And then the other thing that they're doing in the EX90 is they're going to have a bunch of interior radar sensors. They've got these little tiny radar sensors. They're like 5 millimeter square radar chips. So that's like, you know, about a little less than a quarter inch square. And they'll have up to 7 of them in the EX90 for the different seating positions in there that can detect up to 1 millimeter of movement. So if you leave a kid or a pet in the back seat of the car and you know, detects the rising and falling of the chest, it checks the breathing, and you get out and try to lock the door, it won't lock the door. It won't let the door lock, and it'll give you an alert saying, hey, you know, check the back seat. Yeah.
I would like if automakers did more. I like the Tesla's dog mode,
mm-hmm.
where the car just stays on and has the air conditioning on.
And Volvo's talked about, you know, that's something that they can engage automatically. You know, if you do walk away and you leave somebody in the car, it can turn on the air conditioning automatically and keep the temperature under control in the cabin. Obviously, you don't want to, especially with a kid, you don't want to leave the kid in the car like that.
Right.
I'm sorry. I didn't say kid mode first.
Yeah. Well, Tesla specifically calls it dog mode.
Yeah. It's like dog mode. You leave your dog in the car, you have to run into the store real quick, but you have the air conditioning on and it says dog mode on the screen.
Yeah.
People know.
I have to run into the store. I'm like, oh wait, no, I have to go all the way home. Cause I'm not going to leave my dog in the car. Cause it's going to get hot and they'll be uncomfortable and sad.
Or dog.
Now they'll just be comfortable and cool, but also probably sad because I'm in the store without them.
Yeah.
Just new nose pressed against the glass.
Yeah, just like, compared to...
You just got to make sure you bring them back a treat.
Yeah, I'm the treat, to be honest.
You are the treat. I have returned.
They're like, oh, he's back. Okay, we're cool. Everything's cool now.
All right. Let's answer some listener questions. James McCandless, who last I checked was writing for Newsweek. I think he works with Eileen.
I believe Newsweek. He's not any. He or, was. Or did he I leave? Recognize, but he's no longer with Newsweek, and I'm not sure where he is right now. But yes, he worked with Eileen over at Newsweek for quite a while, for about a year or so.
All right. Well, anyway, James asks, will any of you all try to drive the Microlino EV in the future? Yes or yes?
Yes. I just got to figure out where they'll let me drive it.
Where? Because I was looking at the site and I'm like, what even is this?
I have to go to Europe, which, to be honest, I'm in Europe pretty often, to be fair. So
you're normally driving other people's stuff. If I stayed
2 days and I reached out to the Microlino people and I said, hey, I'm going to be here for 2 days. I need to drive your car. I'll just get like a crappy
would
hotel.
Would you even fit in this?
That's the joy. That's what we're going to figure out.
Like, would you actually fit? I don't think you would.
It says it has space for 2 adults and 3 beer crates, which is a weird thing to say.
Well, you know, I mean, if it's in Germany or somewhere.
It is in Germany. Yeah, that's true. They're like, I have
the electric bubble car from Switzerland.
Yeah. For those not familiar with the Microlino, this is a car whose design is inspired by the old 1950s BMW Isetta, which was a little bubble car, two-seater. And the original Isetta was powered by a BMW Boxer motorcycle engine in the back. And the unique thing about it is it's one door, but the door is on the front and it's hinged on the left-hand side. So basically the whole front surface of the car opens up, and then you step out the front of the car instead of out of the sides of the car. And this is basically a modern interpretation of that Isetta design with a couple of pods on the side that look like, it looks like they could be,
lasers
or thrusters, from a Star Wars.
The nacelles, like the starboard nacelle. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. And it's a pretty cool looking little vehicle. It's electric, nominally space for two, whether that is, two, giant size adults or two, modest size adults.
It looks really tiny.
Like, I don't think that Sam and I should get in the car. Like, I don't think that's a good idea.
I think if the two of you got in it together,
and Nicole got in the car, I think it'd be fine. But not Sam and I.
Is it supposed to seat just two and crates of beer?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. Well, the curb weight is just shy of 500 kilos, so about 1,100 pounds.
It's so tiny, people.
And
that Ford Super Duty is going to run over it, and it's going to be like, boom, boom, what was that? I don't know.
Maximum range of 230 kilometers, so that's about 130 miles. Okay. Whether you could do 130 miles at its 55-mile-an-hour top speed, probably not.
Oh, geez, 55. Is this actually something you can buy right now?
Wait, what is 90 kilometers? This like
coming? I don't know. I mean, they've got a price listed, 15,000 Swiss francs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much that is in dollars.
I'm trying to build it, so I'm lying and saying I live in Italy.
A 0 to 30 mile an hour acceleration in 5 seconds, which is actually not too bad. That's pretty reasonable for, especially, I mean, this is going to be a city car. This is not something you're going to take on a long highway trip. It's only
The Swiss franc is pretty 1-to-1 to the dollar. Yeah. So it's $15,000.
Okay.
Okay.
It's only a 6 kilowatt hour battery, which is not much, or you can get a 14 kilowatt hour battery. Charging time.
Oh, so you're reserving it. Wait, I'm looking now. I'm trying to find it.
14 kilowatt
deposit. You're steps away from securing a spot on the reservation list with a deposit of 500 euros. So you're just making a deposit at this point. Yeah. So it is not, available. And it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think they're actually in production right now.
Yeah. No idea.
There's store and events. Well, let's see what that says.
I want to drive one of these.
Yeah, I would definitely,
like last year.
I would definitely like to try this out.
No test drives. The Zurich store is like, let's see, Dusseldorf. None.
That's going to be a mission, Robbie. If you can find someplace where you can drive this.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out. Like, I'm trying not to travel as much as I usually do. It's sort of working, but
it would work. It would be worth it for this.
Yeah, someone's going to give me money.
For the Microlina.
The Microlina. So hopefully soon. That's the answer.
Microlino, yeah. I guess. It's Microlino, I'm saying.
Microlino.
Microlino.
Is there any sort of, wasn't there something with BMW and the design, or was that?
For this?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this until tonight's podcast.
The legality of it.
I wouldn't be surprised if BMW was, did a cease and desist, for design and, design patent infringement. Didn't BMW do a concept, something like this a few years ago?
Oh, maybe.
I seem to recall they did some sort of Isetta concept. In the last 5 years.
Isetta.
He's googling. So possibly they're never building this because BMW doesn't approve. But
I don't know.
So what's our next question?
Anyway,
sorry.
I feel like we're moving on from. Roberto's gone down.
Sorry.
Okay. Chris Fernandez asks, hi gang, still a great show, but I still miss yelling at Dan. Nicole is a fantastic ad.
Thanks,
but not
guys.
Robbie.
Not, doesn't say anything about Robbie. So I
was like, you know what? If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. Nicole's great. What about the other guy? Nicole's great.
Started thinking about flying down to the LA Auto Show, but I noticed their website does not list Mercedes-Benz, BMW, or Audi. VW is listed. Do you have any insight into this? Will you be at the show? Take care. I know Audi has said that they're not doing auto shows anymore. Right. They have not been at any of the auto shows for a couple of years now. BMW, I think, is largely avoiding auto shows, you know, at least, you know, having a stand at auto shows. They usually do something roughly in conjunction with an auto show. Like in New York, they had a background briefing that I went to where we saw the new 7 Series on display there. But that was not at the show. And Mercedes has also been largely avoiding the shows as well. VW, I'm guessing, will probably be there to show off the ID Buzz.
That's good.
And, you know, smart. Maybe something else. We'll see. I don't know. I haven't decided yet whether to go. I'm registered for media days, but Oh, are you?
Well,
our
World Car Awards drive is just before it. So I'm going to go out there for that anyway. So I'll just stay an extra 2 days and hit the auto show. That's my plan.
I'm doing the World Car drive and then I'm coming home and then I'm flying to Germany. I'm flying away from the auto show.
Flying away. He's not just not going.
I just don't feel like there's a lot of, I mean, for me, if you're just a regular person, auto shows are great. You get to go, you get to sit in a car that you probably wouldn't get to sit in, you know.
And that's what the show was mostly like.
Yeah. And no one's going to try to sell you the car. That's the nice thing. Like, you can look at the cars and no one's going to be like, hey, so how's it going? Like, I just want to look at it. I'm just shopping. I'm just looking. We're like, oh, okay. Well, if you need anything. And then two minutes later, someone else, hey, how's it going? Like, oh, no.
Well, since you guys are both going to be there for World Car, maybe I should just fly out so we can record a live show in
person.
There we go.
I'll be there Sunday, and then I leave Sunday night. I'm like in and out, like Saturday night.
Sunday,
oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I don't know yet. I'll be seeing. I'll see if anybody wants to pay for me to go out there. But right now, maybe. all right. Seth Goldman asks. I'm noticing a disconnect between the things car manufacturers are doing with regard to marketing and the realities of current production and availability.
Yeah.
It struck me when I saw that there would be a limited edition Heritage Bronco. I understand the logic behind this type of thing when you're trying to drive interest or excitement for a car. But right now, buyers would be happy to get their hands on just about any Bronco, and Ford is struggling to produce them. Why add the extra production planning burden on adding all these variants? And the Bronco is just an example. We're seeing special editions and packages crop up all over the industry. And this is at a time when the any color you want, as long as it's black concept, would seem to make more sense.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not.
He's not wrong.
Every time I see a special edition, I'm like, there's people waiting for their car. Like, hey, you can get a Maverick at U-Haul. Hold on.
I just wonder if they're like, okay, we're going to have this long cadence. We know what we're going to release for the next year and a half. And it's like, okay, it's time to release that next special edition. Yeah, but we haven't finished production. We have a cadence. Right, this is time for the special edition.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. It's the cadence.
They plan this stuff years in advance.
And they're just than saying, forget it, we won't do it. They're like, well, we're going to put it out and it's going to take 8 months to get one.
Yeah. I think people have learned to just wait over the last few years. They're like, you know what? I really want this Heritage Edition and I know I'm going to have to wait.
And I know I'm going to
buy two
Ford.
And sell one and buy three of them.
And it's not just Ford, like Ford's all everyone. Of them. Everybody that's it doesn't even matter the car. Like they're all, everything is wait.
Hurry up and wait.
Yep.
Yeah. I do a segment every week on Leo Laporte's Tech Guy radio show and had a listener in a chat room a couple of weeks ago reach out to me because he had ordered a Maverick first edition a year ago when Ford first announced the Maverick, when they first showed it a year ago, and he got notification from Ford that a week earlier that his truck was built and it was it had been shipped from the factory, and it would be ready for him for delivery at the dealer sometime between October 5th and October 11th. So like this week, next week. The following day, he got a call from the dealer. The dealer left him a voicemail saying, "Oh, you know, we're not going to be able to get your 22 model year truck. And because the color you ordered is a 1 year only for the first edition,
Whoa. We're
going to have to get you a 23. So you're going to need to pick a different color." And this sounded fishy to me when I heard this.
Yeah.
So I got his information. I got him to send me a message with his information, and I passed it along to somebody at Ford, who then reached out to the regional sales manager in Maryland, where the dealer was. And the following day, this guy got a call from the dealer saying, "Oh, you know, it was all just a misunderstanding. Your Maverick will be here between October 5th and 11th. Because you know what happened?
They got the truck, and they were like, "Oh, I can sell it for more."
As soon as the dealer got notification that the truck was built and was on its way, they had probably already agreed to sell it to somebody else for a big markup.
Yep.
And so, as soon as they had confirmation that it was on its way from the factory, they called the guy and let him know that, you know, they had to cancel his order. And so fortunately, this guy's getting his truck, should be getting it this week.
That's good.
Yeah. So,
and then people wonder why no one likes, and then dealers wonder why no one likes them.
Right. Yeah. They do stuff like that, and that generates so much ill will.
Yeah. All right. Next up, from Chris Pollard. And this is a combination of commentary and correction on my part. Says, "Hi, I just listened to episode 264 this morning, and I wanted to correct some wrong information on the Santa Cruz. I made a mistake. I made multiple mistakes. You said they're made in Korea, which is completely incorrect. They're exclusively built in Hyundai's Alabama assembly plant for the U.S. and Canada, because this is the only market where they sell the Santa Cruz. And I should have known that. I don't know why I said they were built in Korea.
It's a default because so much is built in Korea for
the Santa Cruz is based on the same platform as the Tucson,
which is built in Alabama.
And the Tucson's built in Alabama now.
Whoops.
So this is the main reason there's no hybrid. And this is where I think Chris is actually incorrect a little bit. So the main reason there's no hybrid, all the Tucson hybrids are built in Korea. It's true that all the Tucson hybrids and plug-in hybrids are built in Korea, but that's not the reason there's no hybrid. I talked to a product planner from Hyundai a couple months ago about this. I asked about this, and he said, when they were doing the configuration of the Santa Cruz, they didn't package protect for a battery. So that's why there's no hybrid version. At some point, maybe for a mid-cycle refresh, they'll potentially make some changes that will enable them to do a hybrid version. But right now they can't build a hybrid version of it. And Chris goes on, "I don't recall hearing any mention of the different transmissions between the turbo and base engines either. Base uses a torque converter 8-speed. The turbo gets an 8-speed wet dual clutch. I was wrong on that as well. Totally agree about the capacitor controls. On the Limited though, I'd rather have buttons and knobs, but the extra features are worth it." I don't know if I necessarily agree that the features are worth it. The Maverick is, as expected, outselling the Santa Cruz, but they are both selling as fast as they can make them, back ordered like crazy, and both are still seeing dealers adding $5,000 to $10,000 in markups, which is probably what that dealer in Maryland would have wanted if he could have gotten away with it. If we hadn't intervened.
I've seen a lot of Santa Cruz and Mavericks around.
I don't see a lot of Mavericks. I see weirdly a lot of Santa Cruz. I don't know if
there's
I live near four
Mavericks in my neighborhood now.
Are they really?
Wow. My next door neighbor's got one. The neighbor around the corner's got one. There's one a couple blocks down one way and a couple blocks the other way. So
I think they both hit a nerve with those trucks. Mm-hmm. People are like, this is what I need. Yep. This is all I need.
Yeah.
I don't need all that other stuff.
I don't need a Super Duty. A Maverick will do just fine.
Yeah.
I can take the trash to the dump in my Maverick. Who knew?
Yeah. I did that. I did that last year when I had a Maverick, and I was trimming a tree, and I just loaded up all the branches in the back and took it to the township compost site and just dumped them out there.
Yeah, I filled it with rocks.
Yeah. You can do that too.
800 pounds of rocks.
And in the Santa Cruz, I had 800 pounds of topsoil. So
there you go.
Which is what happens to rocks after a while.
Yes.
Eventually.
It's eventual rock. It's
if you let them erode long rocks. Enough, you know, a few million years, it'll become topsoil. All right. Last one from Goop to AJ. I've generally observed that vehicles in the Tucson Escape CRV class, so that's the compact crossover, are redesigned every 4 years. What does that mean for the redesign cycle for the Santa Cruz and the Maverick?
I think the Mavericks, it's going to be like a really slight redesign because that's what Ford's been doing. And also people like the way the Maverick looks. Hyundai, on the other hand, they're crazy when it comes to design. So who knows what Hyundai's going to do? They're going to be like yeah!
Hyundai, yeah. I feel like Hyundai's
going to we're going to make the Cybertruck. They're going to have the Cybertruck out before the Cybertruck. Like, ha ha, suck it, Elon.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I can see Hyundai doing that. Like, look at what he did. Yeah.
They're like,
Maverick
boom, magic.
Maverick is just going to do like, hey, little thing, like this headlight is now 0.2 millimeters different. Ha! Yeah. Then the Hyundai is going to be like, look at what we have built.
It's a space truck.
The space truck.
But AJ's right about, I mean, you know, in general, high volume programs, you know, like these, you know, are typically on a 4, maybe 5 year product cycle for redesigns. Yeah, but you're right, Robbie. You know, Hyundai tends to make radical changes from one generation to the next. So the next generation Tucson in 2026, you know, will probably look completely different from the one we have today. You know, it'll probably be electric, you know, and maybe even, you know, shaped like a doorstop. Who knows?
It'll be like the coolest looking doorstop for some reason. That's the weird
really
thing.
Cool but
you're like, oh my gosh, look at that doorstop. But the Maverick doorstop.
The Maverick will still look like a small pickup truck.
Like a Maverick.
Yes.
Yep.
tiny little, like Nicole was saying, tiny little three. Well, we put 0.2 millimeter adjustments to the headlights.
We changed the grill a little bit, slightly recontoured the headlights.
Yeah. That was the change inside the weave of the fabric is 0.3 millimeters smaller on the dashboard.
We molded a different texture onto those hard plastics in the interior.
It was a tight checkerboard. Now it's a slightly more open checkerboard. I can't tell the difference, but it's there. Trust
it's
us.
There. It's there. Yeah. Just look at the Mustang.
Yeah. All right. Thank you everybody for the questions. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye everyone.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.